Hi friend, welcome to the Quiet Connections podcast. Do you feel anxious and not good enough in social situations? Feel like you're weird, broken, or don't fit in? You are not alone. Join Hayley and Stacey on a journey to quiet confidence, picking up key insights to help you feel more calm and confident, so you can finally speak up, join in, and feel like you belong too.
Hello there, welcome to the Quiet Connections podcast. My name's Hayley, and in this episode, I am joined by body confidence coach Stephanie Farrell. And we'll be exploring an issue that affects a real majority of people today, feeling dissatisfied with our bodies. So many of us believe that we need to change the way that we look in order to feel happy and to be accepted. And throughout our lives, we can give an enormous amount of time, money, and attention to our desire to change our appearance, sometimes even taking massive health risks. So Stephanie is here to help us understand why this phenomenon occurs and how you can begin to feel more confident about your body, just the way it is. Welcome, Stephanie. I'm really excited to talk to you today about body confidence. So would you like to just start by introducing yourself and tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing?
Sure. Well, thank you, Hayley, for having me on the show. I'm really excited to speak with you today too. My name is Stephanie Farrell and I'm here in Canada. I'm a body confidence coach. So basically I help women, other women, accept their bodies and emotional eating and make peace with food. And I have a background in various different things. Recently, I've been studying intuitive eating, so I'll be finished with that soon and certified intuitive eating counselor. I come from a background in homeopathy. I do a lot of somatic work, so emotional freedom techniques. Also, I have a trauma-sensitive or trauma-trained background in trauma-sensitive yoga. I had issues myself for over 30 years in terms of disordered eating and body image dissatisfaction, body shame, really. And it wasn't until I really learned some of these techniques that I utilize with my clients and kicked that self-critic to the curb, and began to heal myself, I found the confidence to really work on the things that mattered most to me instead of being distracted by my body and the food I was eating and so distracted by those things in my life. So
I'm really looking forward to hearing more about kicking the self-critic to the curb.
Excellent.
I was thinking about my own response to my body image. Mm-hmm. And it's just so interesting that I kind of felt like I needed to be look a certain way. Like I felt like I needed to be taller and slimmer and I needed to be blonde with straight hair. And mm-hmm. I really tried to create this look for myself. I came to the conclusion while I was looking at it that it's just like I was rejecting who I really am. And that felt really upsetting. Mm-hmm. So I'd really love to get into this conversation and encourage people to really love who they are just as they are, because everybody is worthy and valuable.
Absolutely, just like they are.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, society basically tells us lies about what we need to look like or how we need to be or how we need to dress or what our body needs to be like in order to be happy, to be successful, and to deserve love, right?
Yeah.
But there's so many lies. It's just, it's terrible. If you look at your social media every day, the advertisements and the Instagram and the Facebook and all of these different messages are coming to us. And even now, like, it's even worse now with the pandemic, right? And people are stuck inside and they're on these devices all the time just to communicate. So it hits us And now it's a new year, so it's hitting us again, the diet industry and the beauty and fitness industry are really sending all these messages and all this advertising strong, strong, strong. And yeah, it's just unfortunate. I mean, that's one thing that I usually tell people, the first step they can do is just to unplug themselves if they can. But if they can't, and right now, like I said, the pandemic, we're just using these devices to really communicate. And, you know, I tell them just to unfollow these influencers, unfollow these people or these pages or whatever it is, groups that make them feel bad about themselves.
Yeah.
Right? And just to sort of unplug from those. And then maybe in terms of the body confidence or the body acceptance piece is to find groups that are supportive for that. I have a group on Facebook myself. So finding groups or finding pages with different influencers of different body types and sizes, that can be very helpful. You know, when you're looking at images of people that are in different body sizes or different types, larger bodies, then, you know, you're going to get more used to it and it'll make you feel better in yourself.
Yeah, that's a really useful tip. Be mindful about what you're actually taking in.
Even magazines and television. I mean, we choose what we watch, right? I mean, for the most part. So really choosing mindfully.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many messages out there telling us how we should be and what we should look like. Then it must be so common that people are affected and feeling dissatisfied and shamed with their body image.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Men and women and all different gender types experience this. Yeah. Right?
When I ask the community, they have worries around their weight. They have worries around spots. Spots was a huge one. Like people feeling like teenagers because they felt like they still had acne. And I thought, wow, I've not even noticed this in this person. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on there then when our self-image is like, you know, there's something wrong with me.
Oh yeah. I mean, well, that it's very much like a trauma in a sense, right? When we're feeling that kind of shame or when we're feeling that way about ourselves, it's putting us into this mode of fight, flight, freeze, right? That kind of response. So, you know, we're really speeding up. Usually I would say it's a flight response where our mind keeps going and it keeps snowballing and then we keep feeling worse about ourselves. You know, all those stress hormones that are created, actually they mess with our hormonal system. All of it messes with our hormonal system. So of course, you know, things like spots, like you say, all kinds of things, adrenals are not happy. And then even that raises cortisol levels, which can lead to, you know, having us put weight on where we don't want to, or when we don't want to, and we're striving so hard. I mean, it's pushing our hormones, right to the brink.
And I think the other thing that I find really interesting about the self-image is that once you've got this idea about how you look and you believe that you come across a certain way, you're always looking for evidence for this to be true. That's just how your mind works, isn't it? We filter out everything that tells us that something different could be going on. And we just collect all these little pieces that say, oh, look, there's another spot. Now my whole appearance is ruined. And
We're our own self-critics, right? And in terms of comparing with other people around us, looking at the other people, comparison is really the thief of joy. Right? So we're comparing and then we're looking at ourselves and comparing again. But we really have this negativity bias. So one you know, mean thing that someone has said to us really sticks with us.
Mm.
And particularly from childhood. I mean, I find, you know, children are like little sponges, just like little sponges, and they take in everything.
Yeah.
On, even if it's not said, a look, a feeling, an emotion from a parent. Unfortunately, these things are generational too.
Yeah.
Body image and food issues are generational. So, you know, I've seen it span back like three generations, right? With a woman not feeling confident or not being able to accept her body and having all these ideas about what we should eat and what we shouldn't eat and just, you know, negative comments that stick with people for like 30, 40, 50 years, right? And part of that is actually the self-critic. When you listen, when you pick up on those thoughts that you have, that are telling you that, you know, there's something wrong with me or whatever the thought is, that self-critic, it's not really you, but who is it? Listen to it. Really tune in. Is that someone from your past? Who is that? What do they look like? Do they have spots on their face? You know?
Yeah, that's a good question.
How old are they, right?
Yeah.
What is their weight, right? So we really want to identify that and really identify it as much as we can to separate ourselves from it. Because when you place your hands over your heart and you take a deep breath and you know that's not you, you can separate it, listen to your true self and really, really ask yourself, what do I need? What is going on right now to trigger this, right?
Mm-hmm. So can you talk to us a little bit more about what's getting in the way of body confidence?
Well, I mean, accepting our body.
Mm-hmm.
To be confident in our body, we need to accept our body and, you know, body, self-image, body image is part of self-image, right?
Yeah.
So what's getting in the way of that? Fear too. It's very scary actually to start something new. But if I were to tell you to pick up a pen and a piece of paper, so maybe our listeners out there, if you have a pen or and a piece of paper, try this out now. If not, maybe try it later. So take your pen in your dominant hand and write out your first name on your paper. It doesn't take much time to do that. And then I want you to switch hands with that pen. Take that pen in your non-dominant hand and write your first name on that paper. And I'm going to give you a little bit longer because it takes a little bit longer to write with your non-dominant hand.
Yeah, it looks like I've just written Haby.
So look down at that and compare. I mean, how does that make you feel to look at that signature? The bottom signature.
It's interesting because there's almost like a sense of shame with how messy it looks with like having written with my left hand, even though I know that I, you know, don't have to be able to write neatly with my left hand.
Yeah, so you can see, and it looks like it could be shameful, it could be frustrating to write with your left hand or your right hand, whichever is the non-dominant hand. It could be it could look like a child's writing. I know mine does.
Yeah.
You look at that. You know, when we're a child or when we're starting something really new, it's hard. It's frustrating. There might be some shame there because it might be something we've never, ever wanted to think of or to work on or to look at. But when you practice enough, when you practice this, I can tell you, you know, really coming to that self-acceptance, it's the best work that you can really do for yourself.
Yeah.
Weight stigma and body shame, I mean, they cause more health issues than what you eat or anything else, I think, combined. So, yeah, all these messages from society. Unfortunately, I see that, excuse me, not just the diet, fitness, and beauty industries, but also the medical community, linking body size or weight to illness. And, you know, there's really no causation there. What really causes a lot of these chronic diseases that they say are linked with weight or body size is actually weight cycling. You know, people who diet up and down with the yo-yo diet, they're going up and down and up and down, and those things are more causative to these chronic diseases than body weight or size.
That's really interesting. So it's very much about the way that we are trying to cope with the body image dissatisfaction that we've got.
Yeah, I mean, what happens is that we feel dissatisfied with our body, and then we, you know, it's a whole awful cycle. We go on a diet and we deprive ourselves of certain foods. We deprive ourselves of the pleasure of certain foods. You know, having a pleasurable eating experience is so important for us. And we just deny ourselves that, you know, sort of eating rabbit food, I guess, or even, you know, going on the quote unquote wellness diet that is obviously spread by society. So we deprive ourselves physically, and we deprive ourselves mentally, psychologically, right, of these certain foods, and we're not getting enough, we're not taking enough food, we're not getting enough energy from the food we're taking in. So, and people think this is about willpower. It's not willpower. It has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with the person themselves. It has to do with how diets don't work. Because after a point of time of being on a diet and depriving yourself and restricting your food intake so much, you just, you know, you can't handle it. Your body feels like it's in a famine, you know, and so we're driven to eat.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you would call it a binge. I mean, that's relative to it's really a cycle that we get into. And to call it a binge, I don't mean binge eating disorder, but I mean we end up, you know, we're restricting bread or carbohydrates, and then we just, you know, our body can't handle it anymore. And we go for the pasta, we go for the bread, we go for the sweets or the carbohydrates, quick uptake carbohydrates like sweets or baked goods and that kind of thing. There's nothing wrong with eating them, but it's just that we've restricted so much that we end up binging on them. Yeah. And then comes the guilt, and then comes the despair, and then comes on Monday, I'm going to start over again. So it starts and it just goes around. It's like a wheel of feedback, and, you know, just feeling dissatisfaction in your body leads to the dieting and leads to eventually breaking the diet, and then feeling guilt and shame. And people think they're a failure. They think that they have no willpower. Like I said, it's nothing to do with willpower. It's nothing to do with feeling being a failure at all. Yeah. It's the diet and the diet industry that is, you know, the failure that's failing them.
Yeah.
You know, it's terrible. It's destructive to your self-confidence, and it's destructive to not only that, but to your body, in terms of medically, and it's destructive emotionally. It just erodes that confidence, self-confidence and self-image. So
this is just not how our bodies are designed to work, and we're designed for that variety in food. And of course, when we tell ourselves we're not allowed something, of course, our brains go, I want it.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I mean, our bodies are, famine has been around for centuries, right? Like every civilization, every, you know, century, there's been famine. So we are designed to when there is a famine, conserve. So that's another thing with the diets, is that conserving that energy. So actually our metabolism slows down when we're on a diet. And then, you know, in terms of the famine, that makes sense. But then when there's abundant food, we tend to eat abundantly. So then again, with the dieting, you know, restricting, feels like we're on a famine, metabolism slows, then we break the diet, and then we feel the shame and the guilt, and we go back to dieting. And then we wonder why we're not losing weight like we were before, right? And then people feel even worse, but it's the metabolism, you know?
Yeah. Well, I hope that just hearing that is going to reduce some of that shame for anyone who's already broken their New Year's resolutions around dieting. And I know there's a better way, and you'll be sharing that with us later.
Yeah. I don't even like to say the word resolution. I always say to people, you know, if you're going to make any kind of resolution in the beginning of the year, make a different one, you know. For years for me, it was years and years of resolving to diet and change my body and transform it and lose weight somehow.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe creating a new one, acceptance for the body, making peace with food, maybe more self-compassion, right?
I like that, yeah. You were talking earlier about where these beliefs come from, you know, our parents and their own self-images. They might come from advertising, come from bullying in the playground is something that I've heard a lot of from our community. And actually, I shaved all my arm hair off when I was like 12 years old because I was bullied about it. And I've been waxing my face since I was like 13, 14 too. Aww. So there was a particular guy in the class that always picked up on it.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's a huge thing. Bullying in the school playground and in class as a child. I was bullied quite a bit, a lot actually, because when I was young, I was actually in a larger body. So I was bullied about my weight all the time. I was made fun of. I was kind of ostracized and left out. And that's another thing that erodes at our self-confidence. And in those formative years too, right? It can really send us a message that there is something wrong with us, that we're not acceptable. And then again, you know, it does show up in our self-critic, that inner voice. It shows up and it stays with us. Stuff from childhood really sticks to us, you know, all those little traumatic experiences. There are things that we need to look at too when dealing with this to help clear up those issues.
I was also a larger child, and then at some point as I got to be at the age of 16, the way that I ate completely changed and it all dropped off. And I still thought that I was really fat, and we can have such a distorted image of ourselves.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I suffered with that as well. I actually, from childhood, I was a larger child. And then in my tween years, I developed lots of disordered patterns and disordered eating, you know, severe restriction and And of course, you know, I became quite small. I was in a smaller body, and could look in the mirror, and I would look at myself and I would think, you know, I would look at a particular part of my body. For me, it was my hips, my legs, my thighs, and it always was when I was a little girl too, very young girl. So I would look and I would think, oh my goodness, you know, I need to lose more weight. I need to change more. I need to change on the outside. And then I'll be happy, right? So that sort of body dysmorphic disorder can come up. And that's, you know, not necessarily part of disordered eating or eating disorders, but it can be. It is prevalent with eating disorders, disordered eating. But you know, another thing too is that shame, if you think about it, emotions live in our body. There's a real mental and emotional body connection. And that's why I do so much somatic work, working from the body up. So, because that emotion, that shame, lives in our body. And from working with women, you know, who have eating issues, food issues, body image issues, and, you know, have varying degrees of disordered eating, in a sense, they'll look in the mirror and they will, you know, look specifically at a part of their body. It might be their abdomen. It might be, like for me, it was my thighs and my legs. And that shame sits in the body.
Yeah.
Directed there. It might not be the whole body that we're looking at. It could be part of the body. And it's where all that shame, you know, all that shame from the bullying and the messages, and, you know, that's where it sits. So we need to release that and, you know, clear that up.
Yeah. So one thing that I've come to understand is how much we disconnect from our own bodies. And I think in our Western cultures, we're taught to spend so much time in our heads and to kind of like trust what we think or trust external forces over our own intuition, that we've lost that sense of connection with those signals that our body's sending us. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Oh, absolutely. And it's so true. I mean, society values busyness and, it, you know, all that kind of stuff too, that we're taught to look at externals and compare to externals, you know, but that connection is lost. I mean, particularly when you're getting those messages, right, from society and from patriarchy that, you know, women are to look or be a certain way, we start to disconnect, you know. And in terms of feeling shame about our bodies, we disconnect again. It's safer to live in our head. Right?
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that is so, I cannot stress how important connecting, reconnecting with yourself, with your body, and feeling those messages from the inside. So that's a huge part of the work that I do, is interoceptive awareness. And, you know, particularly if you've been, say, on a dieting up and down for years, or restricting your food intake, or on the opposite side of things, if you've suffered with you know, binge eating.
I'm definitely more of an emotional eater.
Yeah, and you know what? There's nothing wrong with emotional eating, but it's how much, you know, do you have other coping skills, right? Right. So it's fine to have, you know, ice cream when you're feeling sad. I don't care. If I eat a brownie when I'm sad, it's fine. But it's just how much you're attaching to that food, and do you have other coping mechanisms? But that interceptive awareness, you know, when we've been restricting or dieting or up and downing and living in our head for years, we, like I said, disconnect from the body, but also we lose our hunger and fullness cues.
Mm.
We lose those. So that's really difficult, you know, not knowing what to eat, when to eat it, how much to eat. Not feeling that, not sensing that. So that's, you know, it's like your hunger meter is broken, but that's okay, because we can fix it, you know, with that interoceptive awareness. Even as something as simple as a breath. A lot of people, you know, one woman said to me, it's the first time I felt my breath forever. Like, it's the first time I've ever felt my breath. I've never noticed it, right?
Yeah.
But it's so important to really live embodied, you know, to be in your body. Would you like to do an exercise on that?
That sounds really good. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So this is a very short exercise. I'm going to make it short. I actually have to, can you time this, Haley, to say, it's going to be some blank air, but that's okay. 30 seconds. So we'll put a timer on for 30 seconds. So I want you to do out there is to basically we're going to take our pulse. So everyone knows that we can take our fingers up to our carotid artery or take our fingers and place them on the wrist. And I'll give you a few seconds here just to find that pulse. And then I'm going to say 1, 2, 3, and then we'll start the timer and you can let them know when to stop. So we're going to take our pulse, count your heartbeat in 3, 2, 1, go.
And that's your 30 seconds.
Perfect. So take that number and keep it in mind or write it down if you have your pen, your pencil. So we're going to also count the number of heartbeats, but we're going to keep our hands away from our carotid artery. We're going to keep our hands away from our wrists. We're just going to place our hands maybe in our lap or on the table or desk in front of you. And then we're going to count down another 30 seconds and count your heartbeats in that 30 seconds.
Okay. Okay.
Just try the best you can.
And that's it.
Excellent. So that gives you an idea. If you keep that number in mind and compare it to the first number, when you actually had your hand on your carotid artery or taking your pulse in the usual method. If you compare those numbers, the closer those two numbers are, the more interceptive awareness you have. I know, you know, some people actually feel their heartbeat in their hands. They can feel it in their chest. Maybe they feel it in their legs. But the point is, it's both of it is interceptive awareness. So some people might not even be able to feel or detect their pulse in the second part of the exercise, and that's okay. If you're starting just taking your pulse, you're connecting with your body.
Yeah.
Connecting. So it really helps to build interceptive awareness. That's where we start. It's kind of where we start. And wherever you are there, you know that this is something that takes some patience and self-compassion, and it takes some practice too.
Yeah. So after our last conversation a few weeks ago, I went away and I was really excited about what we were talking about. And I think I'd said to you something like, I'm just feeling really undernourished right now. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And it's not about like what I'm eating. It's about the other things that I'm bringing into my system. And then I'm compensating by actually eating more than I need.
Mm-hmm.
So I started reading a little bit from Shirley Billigmeier. She had a little exercise that was you draw a little circle representing every time that you eat. And so I've been doing that and I was absolutely fascinated at how many circles I was drawing and like how often I was having a little nibble totally unconsciously. Mm-hmm. And I've been practicing going, well, you know, I'm going to eat this thing, but am I actually hungry?
Yes. And
often the answer is no.
Yeah. So, I mean, thinking about what else, you know, first of all, what do I need? Mm-hmm. You said undernourished. So maybe you needed some other nourishment.
Yeah.
And what would that look like? Maybe you had a lack of sleep. Maybe you felt emotionally somehow undernourished.
Yeah.
Maybe not so connected. But if our listeners can think back to a time when they reached for food and they weren't hungry, thinking about what could they have done otherwise to nourish themselves?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are you really hungry for?
Exactly. What do you really need right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's part of the emotional eating too. Like I said, emotional eating is not always bad. If I want to have a brownie and I'm sad, that's fine. But I know that I have other coping mechanisms, so it's developing them in your way. Like everyone says, take a bath, but you know, taking a bath might not be the best thing for you. Maybe you want to take a walk. Maybe you want to draw or write or curl up with a book, you know, whatever that is for you, find those ways to cope or call a friend, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I like what you're saying about the kind of intention behind what you're choosing to do. Like if I'm eating because it feels good, it's very different than if I'm eating because I'm trying to numb something and that I could be dealing with that in a different way.
Yes. Yeah. Numbing out. A lot of people do use food to numb out. And again, looking at that and figuring out what emotions are under there and how we can create coping mechanisms to create a new pattern, because it's all about patterning too. Once we're in a pattern, it's like that yo-yo diet pattern, right? Mm-hmm. Up and down, and then despair and guilt and shame, and then again dieting. So it's like that pattern. Our system, our nervous system, and it creates a pattern. And so reaching for food, and you know what? Like there probably was a time in life when it served a purpose. I mean, for me, when I was a child, food served a purpose. It was the only way I knew how to cope with feeling unsafe or fearful growing up. And the food was safety, and the food was nourishment, and the food kept me safe. But after a while of doing that, I created this pattern so that every time something came up that disrupted me, that was triggering, I would reach for the food. Yeah. So that's where emotional eating becomes this pattern, and we don't have other coping mechanisms. So when we can look at that, find the emotions, find what you need, and then create different coping mechanisms, we can change that pattern. Yeah, it's all about that repatterning.
What other strategies would you suggest people try for connecting with their selves, silencing their inner critic? You know, what's the first kind of step that you would suggest someone take?
Wow. There's so many things. I think one thing is to be very careful, like I said, with what messages you're taking in. On a daily basis, you may have a lot of inner work to do from childhood. You may have a lot of different things going on, but to just filter those messages that you're getting and reframe that in a more positive way. Follow IG accounts that are body positive, or follow different, look at different types of people, different body sizes and such. So that's one thing. That's a very simple thing we can all do. We can control what we look at, what we watch, and what we read. Number two, I think being aware. Awareness is the first key to change something. And I think, as I said earlier, we are our own worst critics. So being aware when that self-critic comes up, and just being aware and trying to separate ourselves from it. So that's part of what I teach in my body confidence reboot. It's a lot of self-critic stuff. So really trying to reject that or let go of that. That's a huge part. Notice how you're talking to yourself, right?
Yeah, definitely. The words that you use really matter, doesn't it?
And this is another thing. Be very aware of the people in your life who you're connected with. When you want to change something, you know, you could have friends where you used to run or talk about exercise or talk about what diet you're on. And that's a very bonding experience, right? It's part of, bonding, I guess. But it's always like competition too, right? Who makes you feel good about yourself? about other aspects of yourself. Who focuses on those things, right? Who makes you feel good about your body? Who doesn't? And again, you know, you might have to change things or change the way you relate to those people.
Yeah.
And they'll get it after a while. They'll get it. They'll understand. Yeah. So those are the things that I would really start with, you know, noticing your inner self-talk, that critic, looking at what you're taking in on a daily basis, and definitely looking at who you're around or who you're connected with, who you chat with, who you talk to, who you do Zoom coffee with, right? And even, you know, even in your family and creating those boundaries, right?
Yeah.
Because we do a lot of self-silencing and that can be very harmful for ourselves.
We do. We minimize ourselves to kind of please people and avoid conflict. And we put up with a lot in doing that.
Absolutely. Self-silencing is one of those things too. We need to be able to express ourselves. Building confidence from the inside out is what I say. because we have to learn how to create those boundaries and to maintain them too. That's a huge part.
Yeah.
It's a huge part. So that we're doing things good for us and that we're nourishing ourselves properly with food and whatever else we need.
Yeah. I think that a lot of us are under the impression that if we looked different, then we would be more happy, we would be more confident, we'd be more lovable.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not our fault. It's like we've been brainwashed from a very early age to look and to see, oh, well, that's what I need to look like. That's, you know, what I need to have in my life or to, you know, I need to have whatever. You were mentioning the straight blonde hair and the, you know, tall sort of look that you were looking for.
Yeah. Perfect skin and slightly tanned. And there's a really specific look that I had in my head that I thought I should be in order to be lovable and worthy and accepted. And until I looked like that, I wasn't going to be good enough. But, you know, I'm not that person. I'm a short, slightly overweight redhead with freckles and spots. So...
And you're perfect just the way you are. You wouldn't be Haley if you know any other way. You wouldn't be who you are.
What I found so interesting was that I actually shared that image that I had in my head about the person that I thought I needed to be in order to be worthy. And somebody commented on my post and said, it sounds like you're describing me. And I'm no supermodel by any stretch of the imagination. And I also feel the same way.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's always like something else that we think we could be. And I feel like even if I did look that way, I still wouldn't have been happy. And there would have been another thing to aspire to. And then another thing and more messages coming in.
That's so true. I mean, those people, you don't know. And this is another thing too. You don't know when someone has that, you know, in terms of body shape or has that look to them. You don't know how they get that look. You don't know if they have an eating disorder or disordered eating, or if they're feeling shameful about their body or their spots, or you don't know. Right.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. And for me, I, like I said, I restricted so severely. I was very, very small, and very unwell, in my teenage years and into my early 20s. And I really thought if I get to that perfect weight, whatever that weight was, when I get to that size and that perfect weight, then I'll be happy. I can tell you, it does not make you happy.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you happy. What happiness is, you have to find the happiness on the inside. You really have to find that happiness on the inside and feel those internal cues instead of looking to the external, you know. And we're people that, you know, human beings compare. Right? We always compare and we always feel this need to better ourselves in some way. But learning to accept who you are and, you know, really being able to let go of all those things that distract us from who we are and from what our talents and what we want in life and our goals and how we can better things. I mean, you know, that's really it. Don't put your life on hold to be a certain something that is, you know, not attainable in some ways, right?
Yeah, that's beautiful. I think everybody has so much potential within themselves, but as long as we're busy rejecting ourselves and wishing we were somebody else and trying to be somebody else, that we're not allowing that to grow and to be expressed into the world.
Exactly. And I mean, this is like a huge level too. It's worldwide. If you think of it in terms of like globally, you know, how are women globally, the big picture, it's like, I believe women work 2/3 of the working hours out there and they only own 10% of the property in the world. So that gives you kind of a perspective, right? And I think a lot of it is that we're so hyper-focused and we're brainwashed and being hyper-focused on more superficial things like our body and all of those things, instead of really going deep into ourselves and bringing out our gifts and changing things with our talents. And, you know, it's unfathomable. It's just, I can't even express how much that makes me angry.
Wow. Yeah.
2/3 of the work hours and 10% of the property. I mean, you know, that's another thing too. There's a huge, it's micro and macro cosm, right?
That's incredible. Just, you know, permission to go deep and like allow yourself to be expressed just as you are.
Permission too. Yeah. Giving yourself permission to really dig deep and find out who you are and just, go for it. Go for your goals, go for your big dreams and just, you know, attain them.
So lovely. I'm feeling really inspired now.
That's awesome.
Okay.
I'm glad.
So where can people find you and what have you got on offer right now?
Yeah. So people can find me on Instagram at Your Coach Stephanie, and Stephanie is spelled Stephenie. So Your Coach Stephanie at Instagram, and I can be found, my website is stephanieferrell.com. So Stephenie. F as in Frank, ARRELL.com. Right now, actually on the front page of my website, you'll find the body image challenge to give you 5 steps to help you to feel better in your body right away. And affirmations for each of those steps. So that's my free offering. And then if people are interested to dip more of a toe into the work, I have something called the Body Confidence Reboot Self-Study Program. And that one actually dives pretty deep into that self-critic, that inner critic, and comparison and all of those things that we talked about. So that one dives pretty deep and they can find that at my website or on my Instagram link tree. And that's on special right now. So in honor of the new year, I thought what better way to, you know, change in the new year is to really get rid of that self-critic and start accepting and loving yourself. So
yeah, that's lovely. And instead of signing up for a diet, you can sign up to create some real lasting change.
My way of pushing back against the diet industry.
Love it. Oh. Well, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us, Stephanie. And I think this has been really helpful.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been such an honor. And I enjoyed so much speaking with you, Haley. And thank you.
Well, I hope that you have enjoyed listening to this episode. And if you would like to connect with our wonderful guest, Stephanie Ferrell, then you'll find all of her details on the show notes for this episode on the Quiet Connections website. Until next time, stay connected.
Thanks for listening. You can find the show notes from this episode at quietconnections.co.uk. If you found this episode helpful, then please tell a friend about it or share on social media.
With gratitude for the support of the National Lottery Community Fund.